Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, what do you do when the first red flag of a haunting appears not in the house, but at the closing?
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have a real ghost story, you know, we like to hear them around here. If you want to leave us a voicemail, call 855-853-4802. Write it in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Become a premium subscriber and support the show if you'd like. No commercials, advanced episodes, access to the archive. Sign up through Apple Podcasts or patreon.com/realghoststories. I'm Carol Hughes. Kathy Gordon's here today. That reminded me of when I closed at my closing, but it was after we had signed all the paperwork. I was like, is this house haunted? Am I buying a haunted house? And she's like, no, you're not buying a haunted house. I'm like, thank God. I just signed everything. I mean, it was so stupid. Exactly. That should have been, I should have asked that before. But it was it was funny. I hadn't thought about it being haunted until after I'd done all the stuff. Because it's so busy. There's so many busy things you have to do and things you have to find and hurdles you have to jump. And I did, I'm so like consumed with all that it hit me right before the closing. I'm like, shit, what if it's haunted?
Well, and I just got a new house and, you know, I have been very, you know, cognizant of that, as you guys all know, with the pet cemetery and possibly more than a pet cemetery. And then just it's just me to think about it when I'm going through a house. The problem with this house is the first day I walked in, it was absolutely gutted. Like it didn't have walls. It didn't have floors. It was dirt. And so it's hard to get vibes off of that when you're standing in the middle of, is this a kitchen or is this a bathroom or a bedroom? Where am I? You know, because it's hard to tell. And so I couldn't tell then. Then as it kept getting more and more stuff in it and going and things, then I kept standing in here thinking, do I feel anything? And no, I feel okay. And now I've been here a few days and I've slept here a few nights and it's been good. Nothing. Yeah, I have not had anything, which is unusual for me. I do expect something down the road, but I'm not sure I don't know that it's this house.
Yeah.
If it happens, you know.
And maybe it won't happen.
I put my pictures back up on my dresser and I keep watching to make sure they don't turn around backwards.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Yeah.
You just never know.
Yeah, you don't know.
But that's the thing about buying a house is you don't. And, you know, there's just all kinds of other things which you have found out too, like your house floods.
Yeah. And which is also one thing I have to say is what I was in here like 2 days and all of a sudden there was a flood. Now, relax. The house is built up. Like when you go in through what would be like carport, little garage kind of area, you have to step up into the house. So the house is a good foot and a half up. And it was the garagey area that flooded. So it's been a headache, but also guys, it's rained 10 inches. My town was underwater.
Well, I think you ended up with more than 10 inches over the course of several days.
It's been crazy. And, you know, everyone in town is looking for, you know, vacuums and, you know, water vacs and dehumidifiers and because everybody's been flooded. So, but mine was in such a way it was happening before all the big 10 inches of rain got here. So I think we've got it figured out now what exactly the water problem is and we're getting the guy's going to fix it. So
yay.
But so far so good on the paranormal end of things here.
Well, this is an interesting story today because it is about a real estate company. Ooh. So here it goes. It says, my family owned a real estate company for over 40 years. We always had local agents working at our office. In the early 90s, there was a newly licensed female agent who did a really great job. She and her husband and twin daughters lived in an apartment here in Baltimore. I posed the question to her, why are you renting? You need to buy a house. Finally, she found a house in the county that was affordable and in a good location. Unfortunately, her husband was constantly complaining about stomach pains, and the doctor couldn't seem to figure out what was wrong. He eventually went in for surgery, only to be immediately closed back up. His pains were caused by stomach cancer that had already spread and was inoperable.
Oh, my God. Oh, it
breaks my heart. We were scrambling for time because he only had a limited amount left. We needed her husband's income to qualify for the loan. Things started getting weird during the settlement of the property. My agent called me from the settlement table and said, "Mary, this is weird. The sellers have pre-signed all of the closing documents and never showed up." This was extremely unusual in the 90s, since most documents were signed in person at the table. My thought was that it might be a divorce situation and the sellers didn't want to be together, so that's what I told her. That settlement took place on a Friday. My floor duty agent was in the office at the time. I have no idea what a floor duty agent is. But that person was in the office at the time, listening to me coach her through how to proceed. He asked where she bought, and I named the street. Moving into the property seemed like the best decision at first. Nice home, good schools, great neighborhoods. Unfortunately, her husband died from the cancer about 2 months after they moved in. I started getting phone calls from her, sometimes late in the evening, saying that something was in the house. She and her daughters were hearing unexplained noises and voices. They could hear something running up and down the hallway. I told this to the agent who'd been in my office the day she settled. He went home and mentioned to his wife over dinner. She happened to be an FBI agent, and she asked, "What's the address on the property?" When she learned the address, she said she had been involved in an investigation there, one involving a missing baby, satanic rituals that had taken place in the house. The reason the sellers didn't attend the settlement was that the husband was in jail for the murder of an infant. They never found the body, but the son testified in court that he saw the baby in a box. That box was later discovered washed up on the shoreline not far from the property. The son also testified that rituals had been conducted in the basement. The wife eventually divorced the husband. When my agent came into the office on a Sunday and told me all of this, I could have fainted. I had to call my agent who owned the home and tell her what I had discovered. As fall approached and the weather grew colder, the thing in the house became stronger. It was touching all the girls and the mom. They saw a woman brushing her hair in a mirror dressed in period clothing. The thing in the hallway seemed able to change size, becoming louder and bigger as the weather got colder. I couldn't believe the story she was telling me, some of which included this presence touching her and her daughters as they slept. They couldn't afford to move. She didn't want to sell the house with these issues. I told her to go to a local Catholic church and have the house blessed. The priest came but wouldn't stay. He hurriedly blessed the home and left. She eventually began dating a man who owned a farm not far from the property, and the family started spending most of their time at his home. One late night, my phone at home rang. She was crying. She said, as they were driving down the long dirt road to the farmhouse, she looked over at the bar and saw this thing smiling and waving at her from inside the barn. She knew I had friends with the Edgar Cayce Foundation. I'm going to stop there. What is the Edgar Cayce Foundation? I'm going to Google that. Edward Cayce Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving and sharing the spiritual and health-related insights from Edgar Cayce's readings, promoting personal growth and well-being.
Okay.
Okay, so let me get back to the story now that we've established that. She asked if I could call them to come to exercise or remove this thing. So I guess they must do that too. What terrified me was realizing that if this thing could travel, could it come through the phone? And that thought really scared me. The story eventually became public when my agent appeared on the Sally Jesse Raphael show.
Oh, wow.
If anybody remembers, what, 90s? 80s, 90s in there?
Yeah, yeah.
She was like
an Oprah.
Sensationalized Oprah. She did more.
I would say she was in between
Jerry Springer and Oprah.
Jerry Springer and Oprah.
Okay.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah. She was nowhere in Jerry Springer land, but closer that direction. And she wore the red glasses because it says, remember the woman with the red glasses.
She had the big red glasses. Mm-hmm.
The story was so bizarre that Sally flew in a psychic from California to spend one night in the house using his equipment to determine what the entity was. To my knowledge, the psychic never discovered any apparitions. I don't remember his name, and although I saw the episode when it aired, I haven't been able to find it on YouTube. Sally actually accused my agent on air of making up the story for publicity. I had known this woman for years. She was of sound mind, and in my estimation, she would never subject her daughters to that kind of publicity unless she was truly desperate. The Edgar Cayce people did agree to try to help her. They spent an entire weekend at the house and, according to her, were able to rid her of the entity. During their research, they discovered that the original landowner, long before the suburban development, lived on that property and had a reputation for being a terrible, angry man who terrorized the locals. Why did the activity grow stronger as the weather became colder? No one really knows. Years passed, and eventually I lost contact with my agent. She left my company to run her late husband's business. The last I heard about 5 years ago, she passed away from cancer. I've never forgotten this situation. It has crossed my mind many times over the years, wondering what happened to her daughters, who owns the house now. True story, I never went to the property out of fear. Strange things happen in houses, but in all of my years of real estate, I have never encountered anything as terrifying as this. And that's from Mary.
Hmm.
That's really scary. And wouldn't you feel like, she's the one who's like, why are you renting? You should buy a house. And then I would feel kind of like, man, I set her up for all this. It's not her fault by any means, but she's who got the ball rolling on all this.
Okay. Now, I totally believe everything she's written here. Nobody could just grab Sally Jesse Raphael and put him into the story. So, you know, it was a pretty big deal if it made national television. That's pretty crazy.
Now, I will say I have watched the Jerry Springer documentary. I don't remember what it's on, what streaming service. But they had people, and I'm sure Sally Jesse was the same way. They were constantly looking for stories, and they love these kind of sensational stories. So this is something at the time I would think the Sally Jesse people would have been like, oh, my God, this is awesome.
Right.
Let's get them on, and then you confront them once they're on the air with the uncomfortable, we think you're making it all up.
Oh, exactly. But, you know, the story had enough momentum that it was picked up. Like, people were talking about it if it caught the radar of Sally Jesse Raphael's show, right?
Yeah. And she might have written into the show because you used to be able to write in.
Like, yeah, there could have been something. But, you know, I do believe there would have to be enough interest in this story that they'd go, oh, that is pretty fascinating, that they'd want to have it. Now, with all of this said, there's just so many angles, don't you think? Because the husband dies. Could we have the husband back for a while, that he's watching them or something? You know, that was my first thought.
It felt mean.
Well, and it felt like it started after he died. And so my first thought was, you know, are some of these initial things him? But then he's moved on. You know what I mean? Like, not everything was maybe mean to begin with. They heard footsteps. They heard some voices. When I have had people die, I, within a few days of their death, hear voices. Like, it sounds like people are talking around me. I get peripheral visions. I might hear things, doors shut, you know, just kind of odd stuff. But then it's usually gone in 3 or 4 days, 3 to 5, I'd say. And at first I thought, well, maybe it's him. maybe he's there for a little bit. Then it seemed to get evil. Then we have the whole bizarre satanic baby murder story and the guys in prison for murdering a baby, that there seemed to be satanic rituals possibly happening in the house. Then we have this other thread that it appears the original owner was a tyrant that people hated, and he was very mean. Didn't necessarily have, we don't necessarily have exactly what it was that he was doing that was terrorizing people. So I think it's got a history of this really bad, just, what do I want to say, energy in the house. Is this energy, is whatever this is, being put into the house in various generations? Like, I'm wondering, now, maybe the guy who killed the baby is just a horrible person, right? Or maybe he was possessed by something
and started down this weird path. Isn't that kind of the Amityville horror? That's kind of the, like, the original movie. Mm-hmm. Isn't that kind of the premise that...
Yeah, and I mean, maybe he started, being taken over by some, and then just went down this bizarrely weird path. I mean, I don't think people just wake up one day and think, I guess I'll be a satanic ritual person or whatever. Now, mental illness, lots of things could play into him doing this. But was there something dark in the house that was pushing him kind of these directions? Was it this man that originally had the house? Was it him that was kind of manipulating the people that lived there? And right now, the real estate agent, like, she wasn't being manipulated by it, but she was definitely afraid of it. It definitely seemed evil, what was around her. But I feel like maybe this thing was kind of just living in the house and kind of pushing people.
Well, it was being an asshole. It was being a total asshole and touching them while they slept and stuff.
Right. What do you think about the barn thing, though?
I don't know about that, because I would like to know if there was more going on at that house. Because, once again, I'd like to mention paranormal PTSD, and you're living with this, and could you have maybe seen something in the barn? Because inside a barn's going to be pretty dark as you're pulling up to it. Mm-hmm. Could you have seen something that in your head, you were like, oh my God, that was it?
Well, and I don't know. The question there was, could this thing travel and, just follow you? The short answer to that is absolutely, of course. Like, what would keep something, somewhere? If it attaches to you, I don't see why it can't go with you. But I find it hard to believe it would be over in the barn just waiting for you. It just seems weird. And why isn't it not in the farmhouse? There didn't seem... Now, maybe if we were digging deeper into this story, she'd say, oh, yeah, there were all sorts of things happening in the farmhouse, too. Now, so maybe, but I would think she would have mentioned that they were also having trouble at the farmhouse and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I don't think it did follow. I think this was very house-oriented. And, the other question being, could it go through the phone?
That seems weird to me.
So I think that would be odd, though. We do have electrical things, and I watched the Mothman 27 times, and that thing was calling people. But I don't think that it rides through the phone frequencies to get to you. But I think it can just get to you.
But I'm with Mary. When you're talking about things like that, it's like, oh, what, I want to close down
paths
to me. Mm-hmm. So I get that.
But I feel like I don't think this thing would need a phone. I think it can just do what it wants, right? I think it can go where it wants. But Personally, I felt like the thing was house oriented.
And I'm a little bit pissed.
I think it was part of that
I'm
house.
A little bit pissed at Sally Jesse Raphael that
I am too.
She brings her onto the show and then does that, as they frequently do on those type of shows. Then they kind of try to humiliate you a little bit, like obviously you're crazy. That's not
you
right.
Know, I hate that too, because that even is more stressful. Yeah. You're going through what's is very bad anyway, and then to have somebody on national TV act like you're just making it up for attention.
Yeah, because I think I'm going there for help, and what I'm really doing is going there to be judged on national television.
Yeah.
There's just been so many shows like that where they do that to people, and I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Let's go to this phone call.
Hey, guys. I just got back from my hometown, and just the experiences that I've had at this little apartment complex I lived in from the time I was in second grade to fifth grade. And I have two stories from that apartment. So, okay. The first one has a little bit of a backstory. My mother, her best friend, this was probably around 2006. My mom's best friend was married to this guy. They were married about a year, and they got divorced. And they lived in the apartment complex. They lived in one of the bigger apartments when it was them and his two daughters from a previous marriage. And then when they got divorced, he moved into, like, a single-bedroom apartment in the same complex. I'm thinking about that. That's really – I would not want to do that, but whatever. And this particular apartment – I don't know. I was very young, and I didn't talk. This is when I first moved in, and I didn't have a lot of friends. I think a couple of months after they got divorced, he committed suicide in the apartment. He shot himself in the head. After that, being so young and then being exposed to suicide, it was something very shocking and something that I was just not prepared for. And I knew him. I felt sad. So anyways, a few years later, I had a friend that lived in the apartment adjacent to his apartment, and I was over there. We watched a lot of ghost stuff. I think it was before Ghost Adventures. It was probably like Taps, I think. So we were trying to, like, we were into it. Definitely kind of opened ourselves up to it. And there was a lot of weird things that happened at the apartment complex. They had a tennis court, and one day a basketball was following me around, and I was making really, like, ridiculous, like, dramatic turns, and it would follow me. That was something, like, you want to have on a... One night, I was coming home from his house. It was, like, dusk-ish. Like, it was kind of dark outside. The street, or the lamp was on outside the building. This was between my friend's building and the guy who committed suicide building. He lived in the upper right floor. We've talked to kids around the apartment, and they said they heard footsteps, they heard voices, and, you know, just weird stuff. And there was really just weird energy there, definitely. And so I was walking home and was between it, and it can't be more than like 20 feet long of this little alley. I don't know why. I turned around and I saw this black mask. It's so hard to explain, but it was in this shape. It was taller than me. I was little. I was like third or fourth grade at this time, and it was taller, and it was not completely opaque. You could still see through it a little, but it was like you knew it was there, and it was thinner as it got towards the bottom of it. I don't know how to explain it, but it was so terrifying. And I screamed and ran all the way back to my apartment. I don't know if I told my mom, actually, because it scared me so bad. And I felt like it wasn't good. It was so dark. And it's something I think about so often. And even though, like, I was a kid, I was watching these ghost shows, I was putting it in my head, I just knew what I saw. I didn't make it up. I absolutely knew it. And it's something I think about all the time. But the other story, we were playing Bloody Mary in the laundromat bathroom, me and my friend. She was doing it. I was just in the corner watching. And they said that they were like, yes, that happens. You know, I don't remember what they said happened to them. I'm not going to say the exact way because I don't really want to open that up. I get that. But so she did it, and then we hit the light off, and she turned around. I saw her in the mirror, and then she turned around, and her face looked like bone. It was the freakiest thing ever. And I've tried to explain it to people, and they're like, it's just the light playing tricks. You were in the dark. I was like, I know. I saw, and she put her hands on her face. I remember seeing it, and she said she felt bone on her face. That was something. We screamed so loud. We almost got, like, charged by the apartment. I think the landlady was so mad. But it was the scariest thing. I remember after that, I slept with my covers on my head for a good, like, 8 months. I went through a phase where I would sleep with the covers in my head. I just have, like, a little hole open in my covers for freezing because it was too hot in the covers. But, yeah, that was scary. It was so scary. Yeah, that's my story. Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for having this show, and thank you for having a very open environment about it. And I hope you'll have a great day.
So, do you think she lived in a haunted apartment complex as a child?
I do think that there was some sort of haunting from this man around that building. Like she said, she turned around and saw this thing, and I could tell by her voice, she still gets creeped out when she thinks about it. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like something did happen there. And I know a lot of times we go, well, they're kids, you know, kids. I think honestly, a lot of kids are the best barometers of paranormal activity because their minds are just open to things and things have the ability to come in. You know, as we get older, we put up the walls so that can't happen. But kids don't have those walls built up yet. And so I think they can see things oftentimes that adults don't see. And I think she saw this creepy thing in the mirror. What? She didn't see it? No, I think she did. I think you shouldn't play Bloody Mary. I think you shouldn't use Ouija boards. I think there are things, let's face it, people, just stay away unless you are trying to bring it towards you, right? But kids don't know better, and they're doing weird things. And yeah, Bloody Mary may just be a game, but the fact is they started this game to open themselves up to something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they got a little taste of it that day.
Watch out what you wish for.
That's what I think. So yeah, I do. I think so. Now, can a basketball just follow you by itself? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Unless something's going on and it's, a weird possessed basketball, but all the same, it just does feel like definitely there was something dark that was left there when he committed suicide. And it does. Those kind of horrific deaths like that, just, they do put a shadow across everything. But I do feel like there was something there when she turned around. I could just tell by her voice.
Well, the whole thing, I think, really is apparent in her voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I do. I think it was haunted. I'm going to go with it.
But I also got to say, watch out.
That's right. If you're going to play Bloody Mary, if you're going to open up that Ouija board, I'm just saying, things can happen.
Never know. Well, if you have a story you'd like to share with us, please do that. You can call it in and leave us a voicemail at 855-853-4802. Write it down at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you would like to be a premium subscriber, get the advanced episodes, access to the archive without commercials, sign up through Apple Podcasts or patreon.com/realghoststories. And for all of us here at Real Ghost Stories Online, we thank you very much for listening.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.